March 9th, 1978, Session 6 with Henry Swanson of Unalaska.
They call them. They're just thick on rocks up here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Black.
You know, they're black. And some places.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and they're all over the rock. Right, you know, you can just scoop them off. Patterson used to eat them.
Oh, I think it was Chinese caps, or they call
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's just like abalone. It's, or, you know, it's stuck on the rock.
Yeah.
And, anyhow, the Patterson used to eat the periwinkles, I guess they call them. They're a little tiny black snail. See, about big as end of your finger.
Yeah. You know, how did he have a pick or something?
Yeah, he ate them with a toothpick.
Oh.
Yeah, he steamed them and he said they were good, but then maybe they were. Because they're a sea animal. And
there's lots of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many things that people don't eat, like the blue mussels.
Yeah, well, those are delicious.
Good. Yeah, those are really good.
Yeah. They're better than oysters. Mm-hmm. That is, if a man likes raw oysters, he'd like them blue mussels, especially when you get them. You know, where they're not so thick, but they're big, and
yeah,
they're fat. You know,
Fred used to get them from by Hog Island.
Yeah.
And fat, and he would steam them, and they were really good. You can buy canned mussels, you know,
yeah,
for 59 cents a can.
But I've ate raw oysters and this and that, and I'd rather have a raw mussel any time. Then one time when I was, had the, 1930, when I had the sea otter, that's the first time they examined the country for sea otters, you know. After it was closed, they, you know, so they, because there was always quite a few at Amchitka.
Mm-hmm.
So the crane was up. Crane was brand new then.
Wow.
And they hired me to go as pilot, take them to Amchitka. Because they didn't have any money to pay a pilot, so
You did it just gratis?
No, it was, but they had no rating, you know, for a pilot, so I went as one of the professors or whatever it was, you know,
consultant
or whatever they had on their payroll, you know. So we examined Amchitka, and there was a lot of sea otters, and these guys didn't even know what a sea otter was, you know. They never saw one. And they wanted shoots. There was a fellow by the name Myers. He was stationed here. The herring fisheries were going on. Then they had the Bureau of Fishery man here. He later on worked for years up in Bristol Bay. I think he retired 3-4 years ago. Well, anyhow, he wanted to shoot a hair seal. And here was one right close there, and I could see sea otters way out in the kelp patch. And I said, there's one. A hair seal? Yeah, it's a hair seal. Go ahead, shoot him. You know, he wouldn't shoot. He thought I was trying to get him to shoot the sea otter. Yeah, then he gave me his camera. And I went out on a rock there, and quite a ways out, there's reefs sticking way out, and laid there about that high above the water on a flat rock. And here I counted 42 sea otters swam by me in about, I was out there for about an hour. And there was one couple, I guess they were real old. They had a young sea otter with them, you know, they were talking to one another. Yeah, they sat in the water this way with their paws up in there, and here was the mama and papa. The mama was on this side. They'd look at me, and then they'd nod at one another.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they were talking and discussing what this thing was up on the rock. Finally, they send the baby in, I guess, because all it was, the baby was, you know, up on the mother, you know, and she was hugging and kissing him and so forth. And all of a sudden, he jumped off, swam. I was about, 50 feet. He swam in and swam back and forth right below me, examining me, and then he went out there and rushed up on mother's breast and told her what, you know, and off they went then. Now, if I was sea otter hunting that time, I could have killed 42 sea otters there.
The sea otters will eat the blue mussels too, will they?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, do foxes eat them?
Yeah?
Do foxes eat the mussels?
They'll eat anything that they can open. I've seen foxes real hungry eating barnacles.
Yeah.
Yeah, barnacles. And all they got, all this, this fox was, there's barnacles about that high, sticking in. This fox was, had his mouth sideways on the rock and chewing the barnacles. Of course, that was a hungry island. There was, it was a steep island with no beaches on hardly. So there was very little beach food.
What do the foxes use for water? I mean, there's enough to eat, but do they use fresh rainwater?
Or? Oh, yeah.
Must not take much to keep them alive, because
no,
most of these islands out here, there's not, you know, nothing, not much on them.
Well, yeah, most of them got water on.
Do they eat them, field mice and lemmings and stuff like that?
I guess they would if there was any out there.
Hmm.
But the blue foxes lived mostly on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen them here across from Vernon's.
Yeah.
And I can speak to her on that point. And in the daytime, you look over there and nothing but, you know,
yeah, them
mussels.
Those sea otters, they, blue foxes, well, on a good island, low island with a lot of reefs, gee,
yeah.
They'd get rolling fat.
Well, they eat a lot of kelp, I'll bet you, huh?
Well, they eat sand fleas a lot.
Yeah.
Sand fleas and sea eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And probably any mussels too, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
So I know they eat a lot of sea eggs and sand fleas.
Well, they can find a lot of sand
fleas. And they'll catch fish, you know, in the puddles.
Yeah. Or in shallow.
Yeah. You know, when tide go out, there's puddles. And,
yeah.
And I know out on one island I was on, here was there was some kind of eel, I think it was. You know, when the tide went out, they were about that long. They were it was an eel,
yeah.
About that long. This fox was busy turning them rocks over and catching the eels would be under these rocks. When the tide was out, because there'd be little water under, wet under the little hollow, you know.
Have you ever eaten any of the eels from around here or out west there?
No.
Nick Peterson invited me to have some. I know, you know, he's eaten them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's caught them.
Yeah. Well, this island, gee, had a lot of them. And this one fox was a male fox. And there was a big rock pile right there, broken up rock, and there was 3 or 4 litter of foxes underneath these rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was feeding them all. So he must have been a bigamist or something. He was, because them blue foxes, they usually pair up, you know.
Yeah.
And they'll be in pairs. Though when they're chasing in the spring, you know, when they're breeding, there'll be a whole bunch of them following one, like dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they're when they have the pups, they're in pairs. Or it seemed that way.
How many pups will they normally have?
Well, in a good, they'll have five, and I've seen them with eight.
Mm-hmm. Do you get red tide through the whole of the Aleutians?
Gee, I never saw any out there, but then I never noticed.
Yeah, and you have to be out there right time of year, I guess.
Yeah. They probably have it, because if they had it here, it couldn't have been just in the bay here. I seen it when it was during the herring time in the 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the whole bay, ever clean to either point and out to sea would be red.
Last summer, we had a red tide. Did you notice that?
Yeah, but it was patchy, like.
Yeah, it was patchy.
But that in the early 30s they used to have it, the whole bay would be red, clean to either point. And then of course I had a boat and I was running around, it'd be out to sea too.
Did you ever notice it before, any time before that? Or?
Well, I seen it in patches, you know, before that, and but then I didn't know what it was, but during we had them big ones during the herring time.
Yeah.
Gee, that's what brought the herring here.
Maybe.
Because those herring came from somewhere. I've been going to ask these smart fish guys, you know, that if they knew where those herring came from, but I never think of it.
Yeah.
When there's, they probably didn't know either, because nobody knew those days much about anything. They didn't even know where the salmon went, you know, until after the war. Well, at the tail end of the war, it was the Japs find out where, I think there's a line just about Kiska. The Japs weren't allowed to come this way from there, so they fished out there. And in the process of fishing out there, they discovered salmon. So they started to get all the salmon. And later on, they used to follow them in. That's when they were allowed to come in. Well, they'd be catching these salmon out there. Then the salmon would school up to run up the Bristol Bay or wherever. And that's when they really cleaned up.
Yeah,
one time they followed them clean into Naknek. There was one Jap, this was in, I think, 36, or it was in the 30s anyhow. I was fishing up out there and we wasn't getting any fish. And that was right in the middle of the season when we should get lots of fish.
Uh-huh.
And there was this Jap processor out there, tannery, and they had gill nets clean across from Igigig over to Cape Constantine. That's, I don't know, maybe 100 miles, 75 miles, whatever it is. And they were getting all the fish. Oh yeah, the Bureau of Fisheries had a small plane there, and they'd go out there and this Jap cannery ship was always loaded with salmon. We weren't getting any on the inside. So and they were legal, you know, 3 miles. Well, they were more than 3 miles out. Then, of course, at low tide, you know, them big tides out there, you know, the...
30 feet?
Yeah, 30 feet.
Yeah.
And then where it's shallow, heck, it was from high tide mark to low tide mark would be a mile.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, in some places, the sandbars and stuff out there. So, I don't know whether they counted the 3 mile limit from high tide or from low tide.
Yeah, they still had, even today they wondered about that. How far did you get with Henry after I left?
No, we had quite a few things, I don't know, kind of a mixed up affair.
Went through a, were you here when we were talking about the war?
No.
Okay.
No,
we went through some of that, and
he was just coming back.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
He just got off of that boat you caught a ride from Kodiak on.
That mail boat.
Yeah.
The Bergen.
The Bergen. Filipino, yeah. Or Japanese, whatever he was, it didn't.
Yeah, there was a, well, I had a job fireman on her.
Yeah.
And
that's where I left.
Yeah, that's when the sheep outfit had the mail contract.
Do you remember any accounts of any of the older people saying anything about what life was like under the Russian administration here, or the Russian-American company? Did the change?
No, the only one that I knew that was here was this old Lenny Kenty Pedikoff. You know, he was in Sitka, and he never said anything bad about them. Or, in fact, he never said anything about them.
Yeah.
But he was in Sitka when they had the changeover.
1867.
Yeah. He must have been a young man then, say 20 or so, because he was in early 20s, he was 80 years old. And I think he was in his 90s when he died in Atka. See, he moved from here to Atka. But that's the only one I knew that was here, and I don't know, maybe if I asked him about it, he might have told me something. But if it was too bad, he would have said something,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it was, maybe at the first, you know, I think the Russian-American, or whatever that company, I think they were pretty good, but these free traders, you know, which there was, what did they call them? They come from Siberia, and they were really tough characters.
One thing we haven't talked about at all are the mining activities out in the chain.
Well, I don't think there was too much of that, this mine up here.
Up in
Huntsville.
Huntsville, yeah.
See, that one, I don't know when that started. I think the AC company started that, or maybe the Russians did. But from what I know about it, of course, that they found a very rich outcropping there. And that when they mined that out, they would, kept on going in. And they'd hit the pocket now and then, but no vein. This Shiznikov, you know, English Bay Shiznikov, Vasily Shiznikov.
Yeah.
He told me that he worked in that mine. And he told me that that's the way it was. It was then later on, they sunk a shaft right close to the entrance of the mine. And I don't know how deep it must. They must have went down 400 feet. And that was timbered with 8x8 timbers this way. Took a lot of timber. That must have cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
He said he worked down that shaft. And when I inspected that shaft, I went there with prospectors, and I took a long rope with me. And one of them went down that hole, but that's he didn't get the bottom because it had water in it.
Huh.
I think that let's see, who was it cleared that? See, the military blew that up till end the war, and so they, but Bob, no, what's his name, worked for the AC, for the Pan-Alaska, lived in a trailer down there,
Bob Davis.
Bob Davis, and who was that had the bulldozer here? They cleared that one time and opened it up. Maybe it's still open, I don't know. See, there was, when they blew it up, there was, it plugged up the hole, you know. And, they cleared it. I haven't been up there since then with this bulldozer. And then I told them about the shaft. I was afraid that they'd run the bullshit. This shaft, you know, is timbered, and then there was a big bunch of timbers above the shaft, you know, all around it. Or they might run on that to the bull. That shaft was big too. It was, you know, square as a space in here. That is on the inside the timbers, and the bulldozer could have fell down in there. It's to one side of the tunnel. So later on I saw him, he told me they found the shaft.
On Akun Island they had a sulfur?
Oh yeah. Sulfur, yeah. In here.
On right at the Cairn side?
Yeah, this bay here.
Uh-huh.
Lost Harbor is there.
Oh, the little one?
Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
And the sulfur mine was up in here somewhere. And they had quite a factory there. I don't know when they started that, but it was there in 1920. That was all built. And they had a refinery there and everything. And a big tall smokestack. Smokestack stood for a long time.
Oh.
You know, a 300-foot smokestack.
Yeah.
Oh. Steel smokestack. Big, big thing.
Mm.
That went down to the refinery.
Mm.
Then they had another refining process there that they were experimenting with, electric. It was big pots like. That was on a pivot, like.
Yeah.
They could tip them and dump them and stuff like that.
Mm.
I don't know if they ever used them. They never did do any mining there, though.
Oh, they didn't.
They run one batch through a herd, it worked good. See, they had a cable run up to the sulfur mine, then they had that they pulled this ore down. It was ore. It wasn't pure sulfur. They had to work it into a big bin on top of the cliff there. And in this cliff was their rock crushers and everything, all electric, went down to refinery. I guess that's all down now.
probably.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. They had the fine machine shop there. Oh. You know, at the time, this claimed it was the best machine shop in Alaska.
Hmm.
I don't know what they were machining in it, but they had it there. Big lathes and grill presses and these, what they call them, kind of a table deal that they have in machine shop. They had several of them in there.
Milling machine?
Huh?
Milling machine.
I suppose so. It's they can make things on it.
Yeah, right.
You know, the lathe is just for shafts.
Right.
And this table thing, you could make all kind of things on it.
Probably for... Well, do you think they were trying to liquefy it, turn it into liquid?
What's the...
The
I don't know. I don't know what process. They had
maybe
big...
They were separating it.
Yeah, they had big ovens there, like boilers, that they put the sulfur in. That is the ore. But I heard later that, they went broke. You know, the sulfur, I don't think, was rich enough. It was very small percentage.
And the Lucian sulfur is rich, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, up on top, the pure, pure sulfur. And according to reports, I think years ago, there was government mining engineers went up there and estimated, I don't know, 500,000 tons on top. And then there's down the sides is sulfur too, lower grade, mixed with rock and mud and stuff. But up there at I saw samples come from up there.
Yeah,
this
no,
Mariewalt that had that was back in 1920 and before. Way back, maybe 1910. And he used to go up there every year. And he used to come up from San Francisco and up here and do assessment work. And he really did. He'd hire a couple of men and go up Broad Bay Creek with a canvas skiff and supplies. And he went up, I don't know how far. He used to, Nikanor Tudikov, he used to go up with him. I don't know about, what was that other Tudikov?
There was one that married Sophie's mother's name was...
Well, these were, Jack Pott was one of them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but
his last name was Tudikov.
Yeah, well, his, but those were his brothers too, the others. I think there was Nicanor, and there was two brothers.
One of them married Sergei Tudikov's mother.
Who?
Sergei Tudikov's mother. That's where he got his name from, same as mine.
Sergei?
Yeah. You remember Sergei Tudikov. What was his daddy's name?
Well, Sergei Tudikov.
Remember he used to limp and he played the guitar?
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, that's
That would be his father that was brother to Nicanor, huh?
Yeah.
Name?
Let's see, what was his name anyhow? He could sing.
Yeah.
He was a terrific singer. He could sing high soprano and low bass. They claim that if he had been where they had those kind of singers, that he could have been a famous singer.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard him sing. Gee whiz, he could, and without straining, he could do this naturally.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember his name.
Yeah, well, Sean, gee, I know him real Sean well. Nicanor and, well, there was Jack Pot. I didn't even know his name was Tudikov.
Yeah,
till, of course, he was the youngest.
Yeah, his real name is,
Ignacio or no, yeah.
Oh, boy. What the heck?
It's a Russian name.
Sebastian.
Sebastian. Sebastian.
Sebastian Tudikov.
Yeah. You know,
Jackpot.
Yeah, I didn't know. How did he get the name Jackpot, anyhow?
I don't know. I
know he was, when I was a little kid, he was a kid too, but he was a big kid.
Yeah.
He was, he was a young man when
did
I was a little
him
kid.
Jackpot then?
Sure, that's all I ever knew him as, Jackpot.
Jackpot would be.
Well, that's.
Not Jackpot from poker.
Well.
I don't know. But this other man that we're talking about, who probably went up there, then that's probably how the Levines got mixed up in McCushion.
Oh, right? Yeah. Well, there was this Mary Walt, you know. I guess he died or something. He used to go down to San Francisco and come up every summer and do the assessment work. And he was an old Klondiker. Mm. Yeah, he used to tell us stories about how he went to the up Lake Bennett and sawed planks and built skiff to go down the river.
Yeah,
he was in that bunch.
Is that about the same time that Gold Creek would have been named?
Oh, up here, yeah, there was that creek there. That's the only place, I guess, where they could get gold. I mean, free. It was flakes. And, during the Nome Gold Rush, there was, a lot of people here waiting for the ice to go out, and they were here, and they found that they could wash some gold there, so they did. Mm. See, some of them were probably pretty well broke, so they, Huey McGlashan told me they used to do, they could make $5 a day there, which was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
Gold was, I think, $16 an ounce, about that, somewhere around there. And they got it down on the beach.
On the beach?
Yeah. Not up in the creek, down the beach. And there's a big flat ledge out there. It's not there, it's covered up now with rocks, but then it was bare, and they scrape out the cracks at low tide and wash it out. He said it was quite rich, but they don't know where that gold came from.
No, because...
But because there's been prospectors prospected that creek all the way up in that crater.
Yeah.
You know, in that crater, that's a funny thing up there. Was you ever up in there?
Only a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, that part on that side is all crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And this side is solid rock.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get up to it, that's the only outlet to it, is that Gold Creek.
Right. Yeah.
And you get up the crater, the creek divides, and one is running through solid rock on to the right. And the other side is deep, kind of in a canyon-like, of muck, just boulders and gravel and sand and mud and stuff. So that half of the crater has been crushed somehow or other. That's why the creek on that side was deep. And on this side, there was no creek hardly, it was running over solid rock. So that's maybe, and then that creek bed is all the way down is solid rock, too. It's not gravel. It's just solid rock. So if there was a gold came from up there, it came all the way to the beach without getting hung up anywhere.
If that was a volcanic eruption, maybe just rearranged the rock in the part that had the gold in it came up.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Or it could have been a meteor, too,
that
came this way.
Yeah.
And buried in there and busted up the ground. That's a regular crater. It's got a sharp ridge clean around. And that's the only outlet there is to it. Because that creek gets dry summertime because it's all the water it gets from inside that crater.
What about the mine on Sedanka? Sedanka.
Oh, yeah, that's an old prospect from way back.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people think that Bill Brown discovered that. No, that was discovered, I don't know when, far back. There were so many people at it.
Yeah.
And it's rich in zinc.
Yeah.
And I took two mining engineers there two different times. That's before Brown was here.
Uh-huh.
And
he tells me that he thinks that this big pile of this ore.
Mm-hmm.
Goes right through that island and then over on this side, even if you could still pick it up. You know, it's one broad beam, or broad belt of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that was, he said, how do you feel about looking at, I forgot the sum that he named, but that the ore was worth that much.
Yeah, well, these mining engineers, there was one Kennicott that I took there, then one from Alaska Juneau mine.
Uh-huh.
And they both said it was very good.
Well, in 19.
And they were interested in the gold content of this.
Zinc?
Yeah. See, we had, long before Brown was here, this was before Brown, or this...
Johnson.
You know, I was the one who took Johnson over there.
Oh.
But this was long before that I had these mining engineers over there.
That would have been like in the early 20s, or...?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was Charlie Rose had it for, there are different people had it way before the 20s.
Hmm.
And these mining engineers I took there said it was very good, but it was zinc.
Hmm.
And one of these prospectors that I had over there, he high-graded some of that ore and he got the $25 a ton gold assay out of it.
Hmm.
So he showed this to these mining engineers, and they knew, you know, that. So they said, we'll take our own sample, which they did, and they got $1 a ton gold out of it.
This is New Damet Bay.
Where that zinc. They said if it carried, say, $10 in gold to the ton,
mm-hmm.
they could mine it.
Mm-hmm.
Then the zinc would be in all velvet, but it would cost them $10 a ton to mine it,
mm-hmm.
and process it and all this and that. But they could make some money then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that with the gold on at $1 a ton, they, you know, well, it, you know, they, when they go mining, the idea is to make a profit.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You took some people into, was it Pumicestone Bay for copper, or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took these same two mining engineers there.
Oh, okay.
But then these guys had the claims there. And it runs, let's see, for this map thing.
I can get the bigger one.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Oh, maybe a little tiny bit.
Let me get the other Unalaska map.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a better one.
Mm-hmm. That gives the names and everything. Let's see, here's Pumicestone Bay. And there's Killaloe Bay. And, let's see, right through here, there's row cliffs. That's all full of what they call chalcopyrite.
Hmm.
That's, you know, like iron pyrites, only it's just like buckshot all through the rock.
Hmm.
And, oh yeah, here's this little lake here. And, somebody, I don't know when it was, had, there was a big outcropping right by the lake here. That was reels that's about that wide of what they call copper sulfite. You know, it's no rock mixed with it, just solid. But I think that stuff went probably 70% copper, you know, when it was refined.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had from way back, gee, way back sometime or other, had dug a tunnel under this outcropping.
Mm-hmm.
And from way back, even the Chinoski people didn't know who did it. This tunnel wasn't very deep, and there was right in the back end of the tunnel was some timber.
Mm.
That they had some driftwood timber, I guess, piled up, and their tools were there. There was a bellows for the sharpening drills, you know, in the forge. There was no forge there, though, but there was old bellows, just the wood part left, one of them. Yeah, it was a big thing about that big, and there was shovels there with no handles. The handles had rotted away.
Mm.
And hammers. Oh, yeah, the hammers had Nevada stamped on the iron.
Mm-hmm.
Had, There was a couple of wheelbarrows there. They were so rusty and falling apart, but they were still the shape of a wheelbarrow, a pile of rust. Yeah. And there was several boxes of dynamite, too, there. Hmm. It was 40% dynamite, kind of. This real strong dynamite is 60, I believe.
Would they have gotten to that spot from coming up out of Kulalik?
Kulalik, yeah, that's where I took these guys in Kulalik Bay.
I see.
And we followed this up this way, and then from that little lake, it's practically straight across.
Hmm.
Yeah, you could see where that. These marks there where there's this roll clips.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, here's a pass going through right there, see?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we went through up
there along this.
Here along this. And that's all copper outcroppings all along there.
Mm.
Some places where it was that thick.
Mm.
And I took them in from this side. Yeah, that's where we went right up along that. There's kind of a lagoon there, it shows there, and this little lake, and up through there. There's the low place through the mountain there. And then you turn and go down this way to the bay right in there.
Hmm.
And this here weighs, well, you can see where all them lines are close together.
Mm-hmm.
That's all cliffs. Well, it goes up this way, and then there's cliffs in the flat on top again.
Mm.
And there's outcroppings of copper all through them cliffs.
There's it's supposed to be like natural copper, too. You can find it around some lakes and things.
Yeah, but here was, where was it they'd done that drilling?
Well, I don't know, Henry.
It was in here somewhere.
Recently?
Well, several years ago, it's a mining company.
Hmm.
But they came here so early. I think it was something had to do with Aleut Corporation or the Unalaska Corporation.
Oh, yeah, they made a.
There was a Canadian.
They flew. They flew
Yeah, they had a plane here, too.
Yeah, they flew these people around, and they were just making spot checks. What they were checking on was the, trying to get an idea of what kind of ores were that made up the islands, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a...
I don't think they knew anything about this one here. Because I know they drilled in Anderson Bay.
Mm-hmm.
See, they'd done a lot of flying. They used to fly in and go out through the portage there and fly over.
Helicopters?
No, they had a... Yeah, was it a helicopter they had?
No, they chartered a... Must have been a Prince Air...
It was a seaplane.
Widgeon.
Yeah, it was a seaplane. Float plane.
I think it was a Widgeon.
Yeah. They were there quite a while.
Yeah.
But, there was still a lot of snow up on the mountainside, so they couldn't get to where they... But it was very promising somewhere, wherever it was in there.
Yeah, the lack of information about regarding minerals or...
But I think if they had drilled here, let's see, who was kind of guide from Larry, I think, Larry Shiznikov?
I don't know, because it would have been somebody from Anchorage.
No, I mean some native here was... to show them the places where there was, because that's you know, this whole thing here is mineral of some kind.
Yeah. I don't know who.
This whole thing here, I believe. Well, even down here, let's see, that should be, Station B. Somewhere in here, there's an outcropping of copper. Way down here. I don't know just where it is. See, that's where we had the codfish station.
Is that the bay you set on fire?
No, this was, I think, yeah, this one here. See, they had the two stations, right? Well, here was Station Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And,
No Name Cove?
Here's, they called one of them, Dora Bay. No, Boulder Bay. Here we are, Boulder Bay. They had the station there.
Mm.
I don't know why they built a station there, but I think that's where it was. And I set the
grass on fire.
Yeah, and it's a nice little valley runs up there, and Nell's Drug. I don't know. Well, that was Nell's Drug married Edith Newhall.
Edith Newhall. Yeah.
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 Well, he wasn't married then, just before he married, and we were down there. The station wasn't operating, but he was a good carpenter, you know, and he was doing some work there, and I was helping him. And we were the only ones there, and I lit a cigarette, and it was the long grass up this valley, and I said, well, I wonder if this grass would burn. Nah, he said, there's nothing will burn up here. So I threw the match in the grass, and swish, off she went up that valley. Boy, that was a nice fire. We had to work like mad to keep burning down there. But there was tall grass right there all around the houses there.
Yeah.
So, and this thing burned for 2 weeks up on top of the hills in that blackberry moss.
Yeah.
Or, well, that that's not moss, that's bush.
Yeah.
You know, it's, they call it moss, but it's really a little bush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all springy.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh yeah, Snapper Larson was going to Attica. And, well, he was way out here. See, Bogoslav is somewhere right here.
Over.
It's straight out from here somewhere.
Yeah.
It's 65 miles from Alaska.
Yeah.
It's in here. Maybe it's right here where all this stuff is.
I know. We used to go over it, going to Umnak, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
When you went to Nikolsky.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went on the inside of it.
Right.
Going to Attica, though, you went on the outside. He was going to Attica. And it's right here somewhere. And he saw this. You know, every time the breeze come up, you know, this stuff was smoldering, it would flare up, and he thought it was volcanic eruption. He was out by Bogoslav, and he spent the whole night coming in to rescue me and Nell's Drug. And he found out it was our own fire. Oh gee, he was, you know, he wasted the whole night, and then part of the day. Next day, there.
The reason for that survey that League was making was to check on possible potential as far as natural resources went. For, and this would have a large part to do with their land selection. And so that was why. But I think.
So you mean that drilling?
Yeah.
Thing?
Yeah. But I remember asking, because he said that he had gone into it, I asked Holmes, Milton Holmes.
Yeah.
I asked him about whether, you know, if he thought that the island had, because I mentioned Brown, Johnson, Levine, and they're interested in minerals. And I asked him you think that there's any possible, you know, any potential for minerals go? You said according to the government, no, the government doesn't think that any of the islands on the ocean chain, because of the physical makeup, have any, you know, have any potential as a mineral source.
Well, there's minerals, but it's pocketing.
Yeah, right.
No, and because there's, you know, there's, no matter where you went on Lucian Island, you see indication of mineral, you know.
Uh-huh.
And but then you start in, well, like on Atka, there's one place there where there's good showing of copper, right in the middle of Atka Island, on the Bering Sea side.
Even up in our valley, you see in the small ponds or the still ponds, you know, film with oil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the stained rocks that could be caught by, you know,
yeah,
some kind of a mineral in there that came in contact with the water.
Yeah, up right up the valley here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, I've seen that, you know, these pools with oily surface.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've seen it too,
mm-hmm,
huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would be that oil? Because there could be seepage of regular oil.
Well, except that you find them between Agamchik Bay. I know I've seen it between Agamchik
mm-hmm.
Bay and English Bay.
Yeah.
Hiking through there, find little ponds,
mm-hmm.
same way.
Mm-hmm.
I think almost any place can drain out of the.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's maybe from animals.
Yeah, it,
animal
or it yeah, could be vegetation too.
Vegetation,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anything of that sort.
Yeah.
But, I think that's the stuff that maybe used the eye medicine.
Mm-hmm.
An eye rinse or something like
yeah.
that. Never tried it.
No, I don't think I'd want to try any. Though this old Inikinti Pedikoff, the guy that was in Sitka,
mm-hmm.
I was out with him all winter on Tuvalga.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't do any hunting, but he cleaned all the foxes. And he cooked, he washed their clothes. And he built the bathhouse, and he cooked the bath every week, and the steam bath, and all that kind of stuff. So he had a boy with him. I don't know where, it wasn't his son. He was, gee, I don't know what his, well, he went, he was supposed to be his son, you know. But
yeah.
I think he went by the name of Pedikoff. First name was Fifon,
hmm.
And he got married to a Kashiga girl, and they both died shortly after that, TB or something. But he had me and this boy. He was, I think, 16 years old. I was 24. 25, going on 25, and gee, we had a lot of fun, you know. We didn't have to do any work, except we had to haul a lot of wood,
oh.
And you know, because the old man was home all, and then he cooked, he had the fire going all the time,
mm.
Which was okay. Yeah, we lived high there, and we had lots to eat, but the old man, when he had seal, that's all he'd eat, his seal.
Hmm. He'd eat any ducks or anything?
Oh yeah, ducks, but, you know, any store stuff. He wouldn't even eat bread.
Huh.
That is, he'd take a slice of bread, and he knew how to bake, he made good bread. He'd take a slice of bread in the morning, and he drank a lot of tea, And, you know, he'd just take one bite of bread. That slice of bread would last him all day, but talk about eating seal, we had a lot of seal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd every day cooked up a big pot of seal.
Mm.
And that's all he wanted, was seal. Of course, he'd eat other things when there was no seal. But seal and ducks, of course, meat.
Yeah.
Wild meat is what he wanted to eat. Yeah, he was, and we had all kind of good stuff to eat, because I saw to that, you know, when we went, most of the trappers used to just take, well, they were guys that were used to living off the country, so they didn't want much. They wanted ammunition, flour, sugar, tea, and maybe a few odds and ends. So their outfits didn't cost much. But when I went, yeah, I took everything. And the old man knew how to cook it too. And but he didn't care. He'd eat it, sure. But then when there was seal, and we always had seal, that's all he ate. Yeah. The two of us, boy and myself, yeah, we'd be eating pie and a roast goose or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the old man would have his big pot of seal meat.
Mm. Oh. Go ahead.
And I guess, and you know, them seal eaters, they didn't, you know, they'd boil that seal only till it was done. Say 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't boil it till it fell apart. I've seen them even eat it and boil it 10 minutes.
Mm.
And probably that there was a lot of stuff in there that if you cooked it well done, it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tender. Seal meat is awful tender.
Yeah.
Boiled. You can boil it for 10, 15 minutes. I've ate it, and you know, when out camping, and that's all we had to eat. And we were hungry, so we didn't boil no seal meat for a couple hours. We just watched that pot and waited till it quit bleeding, then we ate it. And it was good.
Mm.
It was good that way. So who was Stephenson up in the Arctic? He went out on ice and went to explore, I think it was Stephenson, and stayed out there for 6 months and ate seal, frozen and raw and so forth, and proved that if you ate the meat raw, you wouldn't get scurvy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Peter raw.
But I think he cheated a little bit. I bet he had a few candy bars with him and stuff like that.
That Dane that went to Greenland did that too.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the one I'm thinking.
Peter,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Fortune,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the one I'm thinking about.
But there are very many people that used a lot of subsistence kinds of things around here. You know, I suppose this would be when in the 1920s, I mean, in the way of being able to live. What about this fellow that was in English Bay?
Oh, that was Shaiznikov.
Shaiznikov, Vasily Shaiznikov, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, he was brother to, he was Nick Shaiznikov's uncle.
Okay.
See, there were the three brothers.
Mm.
And I guess their father was a priest or
whatever. Oh, all right.
Yeah. I know there was a Shaiznikov. You got it in one of your things there where it tells about my grandfather.
Yes, Yes.
And Shiznikov.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
In that dairy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they left here. They heard that there was, I think, 300 sea otter skins at Chinovsky and 200 at Umnak. Somewhere around that, and they went with 10 Baidarkis. Shiznikov, the priest, had 5 Baidarkis, and Rankin, my grandfather, had 5 Baidarkis. And they went to get these sea otters. That was in that AC company dairy.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a whole year. The Gary there, 1867, no, 1876, I think it was.
Yeah.
Somewhere
yeah,
there.
Yeah, in that area.
Yeah. That was quite interesting, that dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one place, he mentions my grandfather twice, that one time when he fired him.
Okay.
For, he was working for him. I don't know, then I think he worked for the Dutch Harbor Company.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, they, well, he was stationed at Chinovsky for, I don't know how long, you know, ran trading post there for the, I don't know whether it was for the AC company or for the Dutch Harbor Company.
And this, Shiznikov has had a place up in Katyn. He was one. He must have been the other brother to the guy.
Yeah, there was three brothers. There was Sasha, of Captain's Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Vasily in English Bay,
mm-hmm.
And the other one. I don't think that was Sergei. That would have been Larry's grandfather. The other one.
Oh.
That well, you knew Sergei Shiznikov, huh?
Yes.
He was a little fella.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I went to school with him. He was about, he might have been 5 years younger than me.
Yeah, he went to Shumawa.
Yeah, the same time I did.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, there was me and Leonti Anderson.
Yep.
And Walter Rankin. And Sergei Shiznikov.
Huh.
Yeah, they shanghaied us, sent us to Chumawa, and we went down on the Coast Guard, the Manning.
Huh.
And we got to Seattle. There was some kind of I don't know, somebody there to put us on the railroad. Then we had to get off in Portland. And you know, get on another train. We didn't know anything. We got off this car. They told us to get off. They didn't. Nobody there to lead us around. So we got left there.
Sasha, you said was.
Yeah.
Was there an Alexander? Is that?
Let's see. What would do. That was short for his name.
Yeah, a nickname for anybody named Alex.
For Alexander.
Sasha.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Tsar Nicholas's son was named Alexander Nero. You know, he had a huge feud.
Oh, okay.
And many of Alexander's, some of the Olympic people,
mm-hmm.
Olympic athletes, and they wind up being called Sasha.
Yeah, I heard it. They always called him Sasha, and you know, he raised two families. That is, when he was, there was two batches. Nick Shiznikov, I think, was from his last. See, when he got pretty old, he married, you remember, I don't know if you remember, or you heard of him anyhow, Peter Krukov?
Yes.
Yeah, he married Peter Krukov's daughter.
Oh.
That was his last wife.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. She was way younger than him, you know.
Yeah, she must have been.
And had a lot of kids with her. In fact, most of the family was, that's Nick Shiznikov was from that batch. And that one she lives on this island down there now.
Oh.
No.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean. Nick's sister, Angelina?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember right off what her last name is. So she married seven sons.
Yeah. No, she was married before, you know, and no kids.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she must have been getting up toward her 30s, huh?
Yeah. Easy.
She went up Bristol Bay and got married and had seven kids, one after the other. All boys.
And all their names begin with E or V.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is it E or V? Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know any of them, but...
I met a couple of them.
I knew her. Well, she lived here quite a while, you know.
Yeah. Well, that up there, one of my earliest memories of going up there, and we used it for a fish camp, was butter molds.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah, well, he had a bunch of cows, you know.
Uh-huh.
He had quite a bunch of cows, and he milked them, and, well, he had the regular ranch up there, silo and everything.
Mm.
And anyhow, he lost his bull, so he had no bull, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So old man Queen, you remember him, I guess, or
yeah.
Or you heard of him?
Yeah.
Had the store down here. He was a real old timer. He'd been up north for years before he came here. In fact, he was kind of retiring when he came here, but he went in business. He had money and did good here. And so old man Queen sent to Kodiak for a bull for Sasha.
Hmm.
Well, the bull came on the mail boat, and they were happy. So anyhow, the bull turned out to be a steer. So, gee, with old man Queen, he was roaring and raving there about them sending him a steer when he ordered the bull.
Why,
it was a good steer, though. They ate him. And I think after that, Sasha discontinued the cow business.
Well, at the same time, when I used to go up there during the summer, and there were still traces of the barn and the old garden and these milk bottles and things. In town, they had a building that looked like the ends were knocked out of.
Yeah.
Which spanned the road about where Vern's store is.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somewhere on the edge of the Hope's property was a big barn.
Yeah.
Now, who owned that herd of cattle?
Where, you mean at...
In town, right in town here.
Oh, the AC Company.
Oh.
See, the AC Company used to... every year a supply boat came up in this, just about now.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe a little later. And with supplies, and they filled their warehouses right up to the roof.
Mm-hmm.
With supplies. Because they supplied the Aleutian Islands from here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've seen them even ship stuff back to Kodiak and Seward.
Really?
From here.
Mm-hmm.
On the mail boat.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they'd get the whole year's supply. And, stuff that wouldn't spoil, canned stuff and
mm-hmm.
Barrel stuff. Then, of course, potatoes and stuff like that, they'd get that on the mail boat, you know, later on in the fall. And they had a root cellar there, right about where the bunkhouse is, you know, that bunkhouse by the creek,
yeah,
where the hospital used to
okay.
be.
Uh-huh.
well, just in from there, you know, that goes down this way. They had this root cellar built right into the bank.
Oh.
Big root cellar. They would store their potatoes in there in the fall and keep them all winter. And they kept good.
They brought cattle up then in the spring?
In the spring. See, they supplied the, they had a contract with the Coast Guard to supply them with, they used to get these, I guess they were longhorns. See, they were a tall cow, you know, and they'd bring up about 60 head in the spring, and they had cow yard, the barn, and of course the cattle, they grazed up in the hills,
mm-hmm.
and they got awful fat. And they had a yard, that's how they owned that when they got deeds, you know, they got all that property from Hope's house clean to Crick.
Yeah.
And they had it wasn't a pasture, it was corral like, but went all the way to Crick from the front. And it was quite wide. Well, there was Carl Moeller's house and
Barakoff?
No. Well, Barakoff's house,
yeah.
The new one,
uh-huh.
was part that pasture.
Eddie McLashan's place.
Neon.
Yeah.
No, that was part of the pasture. Well, the AC company had all of that.
Hmm.
See, and that's...
must have been just the side of that...
well, it was from Burnstore to Newtown.
Yeah.
It was that wide.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way down to the, from the beach, clean to the creek.
Mm.
Well, they got deeds on that when they, you know, when they issued deeds
yeah.
on, see, then they sold some of that. And then when Carl Moeller bought them out, he got, see, that place across the road was only three big lots. The one Barakoff has now.
Big ones, yeah.
Then the one in the middle,
yeah.
where the
Pan Alaska
built that apartment house. And the one by the creek,
Carl Moeller's.
He still has that. That's where
yeah.
the bottling works was during the war.
Mm-hmm.
There's still the junk there,
yeah.
laying there yet.
That funny-looking house with the ends knocked out, that was where they hung the steers after they were...
Oh, they had the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Right where the road is now.
Yes.
Right where Carl Moeller's house is.
Yeah.
But right about where the road is now, they had the slaughterhouse. That's where they killed their... It was just a shed with a roof and no sides. That's where they killed the cows. And I think they had a very good contract with the Coast Guard. See, the Coast Guard was big, and they had a lot of meat, and they used a lot of meat. And those cows, you know, gee, they get fat here. They got, I think, 65 cents a pound contract. The Coast Guard, that was a lot of money those days. And
that
those cows were big, you know, they were, I think they were kind of mixed up with them big longhorns, because they didn't have them extremely long horns, but they had horns that long. So they were, you know, half-breed.
Did they let them just graze up in the hills?
Oh, yeah.
Here,
mm-hmm.
Would they have then somebody on horseback to round them up by?
No, there was a guy went with them. I think Nicanor used to be a cowboy.
Yeah,
for
I
the AC
that.
Company. Yeah.
He was a cowboy for.
Yeah. Well, the cows, they didn't wander off, you know. They
yeah.
they had a lot of nice grazing up the head of the lake and all over. barn there that, of course, they had milk cow too in the barn, and then and feed, and you know, in the fall they'd have maybe a few of them steers left over, so they'd feed them, you know, in the barn there.
Did Jesse Lee home have any cow or anything for milk?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think they would want to.
Yeah, they had the. They had the barn and the silo. They had the square silo up there, and they used to fill that full of hay. And the cows, gee, that's, I think, yeah, they had quite a big silo. And they usually had two cows. And that silage would, I think, well, it evaporated, you could smell alcohol. You know,
yeah.
And the cows like that. I think the cows got a little drunk, and then they would. They gave good milk all winter.
When King was here, there were goats and sheep up there.
Mm-hmm.
That they used to milk the goats, and he would shear the sheep.
Well, they had a nice big garden up there. They raised a lot of stuff. Well, of course, those days, too, everybody in town put near had a little garden, because they, you know, there was no work here, and people were home, so they had gardens. And there was, the whole town was like a lawn. There was no poochkes, no weeds in town. If you wanted to eat the poochke, you had to go out of town.
Yeah.
How did they keep the ground squirrels out of the garden?
Well, it seems like there was not too many squirrels in town.
Mm-hmm. I know that's a problem, like with Coe's place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He found that he had to drive Watson Hut tin down into the ground all around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Peterson and Doc.
No, I done that one time with a fox pen.
Hmm.
You know, I was trapped in the island, and I had put some new stock on this island. That was Somalga Island. Yeah, and I wanted to kill off the old stock. See, I put some new stock on there, and I didn't want to kill them, so I made box traps. And built a, oh, I didn't, I had material for building a pen, but I figured, well, gee whiz, I'll just turn the foxes loose. So whenever I caught one of my good foxes that I didn't want to take the pelt from, I'd turn him loose. Well, those foxes were happy. They found out they could go in that box, you know, and get caught when it got turned loose again. Had a good feed while they were in there and slept. Then the morning, here was this guy who would come along, and so they got in the habit of this, several of my box traps there, this fox, you know, that I didn't want to kill, would, you know, I'd open the trap, he'd run out and about a couple hundred feet away and wait for me to set this box trap and go away. So, gee, I finally had to build a pen. So I did. I built this pen, and I didn't have enough wire. I was going to put wire on the ground, and it was sand there. And so I had some of this tin corrugated iron, I buried it like he did in a trench around there. So then I built the pen, and that worked fine. Then one morning, though, I went down there, and here was I had no foxes in the pen. I had big mounds of sand there, and these foxes had tried to get out, and they buried. And then they went in one behind the other. I guess they passed it. And then when they got to the edge, they hit the tin.
Oh.
And that was it. And here, all my foxes were buried. I had about 20 foxes in there then. And they were all buried. They couldn't unbury themselves either because they were jammed against that tin.
Hmm.
See, when they hit that tin, they, you know, and they kept plugging up the hole behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to do a little mining there to rescue my foxes. Well, then I went and I got a lot of stakes, driftwood. Stakes, I made stakes about 3 feet long, drove them all close together, all around the inside this pen.
Mm.
They could still dig, but they'd hit the stake.
Oh,
and
nice.
That was it.
Mm.
Anyhow, after they dug for a while and found out they was no good digging, they quit.
Mm.
I'm trying to remember when this man came from, the biologist came from Pribilofs to see how come there were so many ground squirrels there. Because like Henry said, there were garden plots all over town, and the Russian school students had their own garden plots. It seemed like there had been either the ground squirrels were brought in or...
Well, they must have been brought in. I heard that Applegate brought the squirrels here.
The Russian school had a garden over at Roof's Bay?
Yeah, I believe they did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, they could raise potatoes
in
where there's good sun and where there was sandy soil.
Mm-hmm.
The more sandy the soil was, better. You raised good potatoes. Mm-hmm. But right in town here, you've got potato plants that high, you know, looking for the sun.
Yeah.
And little tiny potatoes like marbles.
Mm-hmm.
Because those little potatoes were good. They were sweet and you could eat them raw, you know.
What did all of them, I used to hear about people using kelp for us to something to the soil, add iron to the soil.
Well, they use kelp a lot here in their gardens. In the spring they'd go down the beach, gather up all the kelp they could and spread it around in the garden, and it was good.
Yeah, it'd warm it up, wouldn't it?
That sand, kelp and the sand, sandy soil too was good on account of that would draw a lot of heat from the sun during the day and stay warm all night, where this mud, you know, would get cold.
I've got something at home I should bring down, a map of Unalaska, the town here in 1895,
mm-hmm.
showing where buildings are located.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think 1895, yeah. Let me check.
I'm trying to fight off a cold.
Well, 1895 now. Well, gee whiz, this town was full of nice buildings, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're all down now.
Sure. Who built that birdcage house?
That was Applegate.
Oh.
That was Applegate's home.
Boy. Unusual shape and unusual color of blue.
Yeah, well, that was kind of... Each room in that building had its own roof. It had a lot of roofs.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, this is 1895.
Yeah.
No, 1892.
Yeah, there's Applegate's.
What is that one?
Yeah, that's the birdcage.
See, and you go on.
No.
This is the line like this.
Mm-hmm.
Vidoff on it.
Oh, Malavido.
Malavidoff.
Yeah.
And Applegate here it said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shiznikov Church.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a Shiznikov. There was two Shiznikov houses. And this is the one that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
See, Nick repaired it. And
mm-hmm.
Them two wings on the back, because
mm-hmm.
he tore them off, and he put the new roof on, because
mm-hmm.
the roof is lower now. And the true, well, there, let's see, well, here's the original church. See the,
mm-hmm.
it's the same church that's there now, except that this, they only had the central portion. Then later on they built the two chapels, one on each
mm-hmm.
side, and then that, oh, that back thing is still, that's on there, on this picture too. Let's see,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that back portion. Then they built the chapels, the one on this side and one on that side, and raised this tower up to where it is now.
And this isn't your bishop's house?
No.
No, that's Applegate's.
Yeah.
That's okay. This
is now you say this is sort of where the Baha'i Center is now, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
Pauli's
mm-hmm.
place and
yeah.
Baha'i Center in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So straight back here then is Parsonage Garden.
Parsonage Garden. Who's Parsonage?
Must be the church.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe they had a garden back there. Now, where's the... Oh, it don't give the Disley home.
No, yet. See, 1892, it probably wasn't built yet.
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's see now. Let's see, this was Malavido's. Yeah. That was right next to jailhouse.
Yeah. The marshal's house would have been here.
Yeah, that is the jail, the one that
yeah.
burned down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, that was here. And let's see, this was where Goss lived. That burned down too.
Hmm.
And then these,
this is fence. Maybe there was a fence.
Yeah,
someplace.
Well, that's where the AC company had their cow pasture.
Ah, uh-huh.
Right there. See, that's where Hope's house is now, right about here.
Mm-hmm.
See, what's all these?
I don't
these
know.
These are proposed. Some of
they must be.
Yeah.
Henry, what is that trunk across here?
Oh, no. See, there's here's the way the lake was originally, and New Hall I think dug a trench across there one time.
Hmm.
I was gonna let that graveyard creek come into here instead of, but they didn't have do it right. It was uphill.
Yeah.
You can see the remnant of that trench there yet.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a groove
yeah.
in the
right.
ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
We used to fight all those battles of World War I on that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Let's see now. Here. Let's see. Church. Yeah, here's the church. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Custom house. Yeah, well, the church has all this now.
Henning? This is Henning here.
Henning. Well, let's see now. No, where's Parsonage? Yeah, this was all church property here. And, which it still is now.
Uh-huh. And
when they discontinued the custom house, see, they sold that custom house. It was quite a big building.
This is it here, I think.
See,
in the photo, anyway, it said.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the church.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, that's where the custom lives. Right there, just the other side of the fence. It's there now.
Mm.
That was, yeah, that's the custom house. And when they discontinued the custom, let's see, 1930, I think.
Somebody was living there.
Yeah, they were. Hans Johnson lived in
yeah.
there for quite
yeah.
a while.
That's
and
right.
then the government sold it, turned the land back to the church.
Mm-hmm.
this custom house. It belonged to the church, but the custom house was used. And they turned it up. Hans Johnson bought that, tore it down, and he built that house up there where Steve McLashan's house. Mm. That's built out of custom house lumber. That is most of it, because he bought some new lumber too.
Mm-hmm.
Parsonage, let's see what were all these. Henning, what was Henning here? I've heard the name a lot. But that was all.
The Russian school and the bishop's house, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my grandfather had this here. See, here's the AC company. Huh? Maybe that was my grandfather's. Let's see, that would be the well, it's his office there. This L-shaped thing back here. I wonder if that was a store. Well, this was, here's a bridge. Yeah, I remember that bridge. And my grandfather had here. Yeah. Rankin. That was the only privately owned property down there, because nobody owned property then, till 38. That's when they issued deeds. Up till that time, if you wanted to own a piece of property, you had to build a fence. Otherwise, anybody could come and build a house right alongside of you.
Was it showed Alaska Salmon Company on there?
No. No, this is 1892, it says. Here was the wharf. See, that went to, well, right there where that land now, that was a dock. And warehouse, there was a coal pile.
Mm-hmm.
And this was what they call the coal house, and this warehouse. Oh yeah, the warehouse is there, the U.S. warehouse. And all these.
Are those company houses?
Yeah, this was all company.
Well, how did they wind up up here, Henry? These, what were these then? Company houses?
Yeah, that was company houses. There were seven of them.
Huh.
Or six. That's right there where Sagan lives now.
Yeah.
Those, all them little houses there belonged to company. AC company owned practically everything, you know.
Yeah, they must have.
See, they had all this.
Yeah.
Then about, Parsonage. I know he was right close to this bridge. So it was right here somewhere, or right against the, probably here. Because it's right next to the church property.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the house they bulldozed down quite a while ago. Probably that was the house. Though the AC company had the... Or somebody had the AC company house right there. See, my grandfather, he had the high fence on the back end of his property there. Of course, he didn't own it, but then he had it fenced in. So, and just left a little streak out there for a path. He had a high board fence around the creek side of his house. And that was, the old laundry. Yeah, that must have been. Oh, yeah, sure.
That's the laundry. That's the place that the band used to practice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was originally laundry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had all the machinery downstairs and the big washing machines, steam boiler behind. so forth. And I know one thing, there was a big mangle in there for ironing sheets. I don't know who they had for customers, but then on the roof, well, you've seen on the roof was steam, laundry, and baths. Mm-hmm. You could see that way up Priest Rock, that was in white. And they had, I think, four bathrooms in there, the tubs. Mm-hmm. You know, all these troops coming through here, sailors and gold hunters and stuff, you know, they wanted a bath now and then. Yeah, there was still some of these buildings there, you know. See that, like there where the tennis courts are now?
Yeah.
There was a couple of them buildings, AC Company, and several back here. That's one of them, I think. They were still using them. And right here, oh yeah, here was that, I guess that's, sure, there was where that funny building was. Looked like a church. Hmm. Had a steeple on it.
Hmm.
And it was kind of on a different angle than the rest of the buildings. And it had a steeple on one end.
Hmm.
And the AC, it was old, real old. It was old when a lot of these other buildings were new. It had a pointed steeple on the end, and that must be, and they had a fence around it, AC Company did.
Mm-hmm.
And the fence was new though. And well, it shows like there might have been a fence there, and they kept chickens in there. And pigeons. Pigeons in the tower.
Hmm.
Pigeons.
Hmm.
Yeah, they ate the pigeons too.
Squab.
Yeah, squab. You know, the Coast Guard, they had squab dinner. Then they finally tore that down, see, in the 20s. And in one of these buildings, maybe they had carpenter shop and blacksmith shop.
Oh.
Maybe it was this building here. Well, upstairs in the carpenter shop, that's where they put the pigeons, but that was the end of the pigeons.
Mm.
You know, they never bred anymore after they
lost their
steeple. That they were the young pigeons all the time.
Mm.
And when they moved them to carpenter shop, there was, I don't know if you knew him, Harry Olson.
Mm.
They called him Handsome Harry. He's all the time looking at himself in the mirror.
Oh.
All his spare time he spent in front of the mirror. Well, Handsome Harry, one day he said, "Hey, Henry, geez, you know those pigeons there? What say we go there?" So we went there one night and went upstairs. They had nest boxes for them and everything. And I don't know how many pigeons we killed, but they were old pigeons. Gee, they were tough. And he cooked them. I don't know if they didn't taste bad, but gee whiz, they were just like rubber.
Yeah.
That little red house that Logan Stepan used to live in on the other side of that tennis court, who built that building? Was that a company house too?
Hmm?
That little red house on the other side of the tennis court.
Oh yeah, Logan's, yeah, where Logan. Right? Yeah, well, that was one of these houses.
Oh,
it was an old house.
Yeah,
and there was several over here. They were most of these were gone though.
Yes.
See, there was warehouses down here, but there was some more warehouses. See, this just shows them two big warehouses there, and the coal house.
Yeah.
and the two warehouses there, but they built some more further up here. Oh, yeah, here, I think that's where the carpenter shop was. Because there was a boardwalk to the carpenter shop.
Oh.
Yeah, because it was way bigger than shows there.
Yeah.
Then on one side, the carpenter shop was a shed, the blacksmith shop.
That was open on one side at one time, wasn't it?
Which?
That blacksmith shop.
No, it was closed in. It was leaned to on the carpenter shop. Oh. They had everything in there. They had a big forge, and with the bellows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they had, later on, they had small forge, one you turn the crank.
Yeah.
But they had everything in there, big anvil and small anvil, and tools, all the different kind of tools. Yeah, these pictures are the Applegate was quite an old timer up here. You know, there was sometime during the 20s there was a German up here. He was collecting for himself. He was a mechanic. Worked in garage, and whenever he saved up his money, that he'd take a trip to Europe or South Pacific or somewhere and collect something. So he had, and he was up here that year collecting, plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him in Seattle later on. Oh, years later, and he had a house there, and gee, what a collection he had upstairs, two-story house, and upstairs was his collection from all over the world of different things. And in his living room, he had a life-size painting on the wall, and it was. The whole wall was covered with his painting, and he had, it was a painting of a bunch of Turks, you know, with swords and stuff, and the Turks, the scribe was writing a letter, and here was these other Turks, they were, it was a small band of Turks, and they were surrounded with a Russian army, and they were going to die, but the Russian general, that was it, the story on this, was that the Russian general wanted, you know, offered to them to surrender. And they were laughing, thinking, oh, surrender to the Russians? No, no such thing. We're going to have a lot of fun. They're going to kill us, but we're going to kill lots of them before they kill us. That was the idea, you know, when he's painting. And then down the corner of this painting, it showed all these, you know, this scribe was, he was real serious there. He was doing the writing. And these Turks, you know, there's some big fat Turks that are laughing, you know, and holding their stomachs and whatever he was writing there, but it showed part of what he wrote on this picture. It let's see, it was insulting
to the Russians.
Insulting, you know,
yeah.
About the surrender, and it wound up that you can kiss our ass, you so-and-so. And it was right on. It was a nice painting.
Yeah, life-size, it must have been.
Yeah. I don't know where he ever got it.
Okay. Hello? Oh, hi.
Yeah, this Applegate, you know, he was, I never saw him with working clothes on. He always wore white shirt, you know, starched, you know, the kind they wore those days, with high collar.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And what do they call that coat? Not the Prince Albert, but... it was round in front, you know, and came way down to here. And had
swallowtail?
No, let's see. Now, the Prince Albert was
straight across.
This came curved.
It wasn't swallowtail, was it?
No, it wasn't swallowtail. That was evening dress. The swallowtail came from way up here with two long tails.
Yeah.
No, this was everyday wear. And let's see what they call that. There was a name for that style of coat, and that's what he wore all the time.
Colonial?
No, no, it was.
He was sort of like a gentleman farmer or something almost.
Well, he was, because when
Squire?
He had a schooner, the Everett Hayes, that he hunted sea otters out of Marjovie. And that's where his hunters were, Marjovie, and he hunted sea otter every year. He was wealthy, you know, because he hunted, and he must have been up here early, because this guy I was telling you about, this German, I met him several years later in Seattle, and his wife couldn't speak English, German, when he was up here gathering plants, he had one of these from the printing office in Washington, a little, you know, them little pamphlets, written by Sammy Applegate in the 70s. He must have been very young then. And it was real, he must have had good education, because this was, it described plants and everything up here. He had that. I told people about this, said they couldn't, maybe it's out of print now.
Yeah.
But he had that, and it was really good.
Yeah.
And, when he, when he went sea otter, he went himself, you know. But he had sailing master, old Fred Anderson, that Leon Anderson's father.
Yeah.
That was his captain. He was a Finn. He sailed the vessel, but Applegate done the navigating. He was a good navigator, among other things. And he was a good chart maker. Yeah, he made charts, you know, that wasn't published, but just for his own use, of different places where he went, you know, like Ukaluga and Schuylkill.
Okay.
He had good charts of that. Those were one of the original Fox ranches that Applegate stocked with blue foxes from way back, before they were worth much money.
What happened to his house after he left?
Oh, this, let's see, the AC company owned the house, and there's different people lived in it, and let's see, during the war, it was still being used during the war.
Dan
Cipri lived in it. It was getting kind of dilapidated then, but it was still okay.
It was still being used until we left.
Well, I think after the war, or tail end of the war, they bulldozed it down.
Yeah, the Parisis were there.
Huh?
Eddie Parisi.
Oh, yeah. Eddie Parisi lived there.
Yeah, he lived there.
Yeah.
His dad came here with either the herring or codman.
Mm-hmm.
But it...
Yeah, it was there during the herring.
Yeah, what did they call it? Because
Parisi lived there.
Birdcage.
Yeah, they called Birdcage. Well, the reason they called Birdcage, see, there was... See, Applegate lived in that house. He had another building down toward the road to this side of this building, right down here. That was his office.
Oh.
It was quite a big building. And and this, this representative of the, the bird, Aleutian birds or whatever his name, let's see, what was his name? He was here in 1920. And bird refuge thing, and stuff like that. And see, I think he went up to Port Muller and then he came back. Then he, the next winter, I think he made a trip to Washington, D.C. Anyhow, he was a government man, something to do with birds, and that's why they call it the bird cage.
Oh.
I think that's when they started to call it the bird cage.
He lived in it?
Yeah, in the other one down here.
The other one. Uh-huh.
Closer to the front.
Uh-huh.
See, like, like from the Bahia Center now. Now that's where this house used to be.
Yes.
Then down toward the road, let's see, facing the, are we facing the beach now?
Right, yeah.
Okay, in your right-hand corner
uh-huh.
of your fence there,
okay.
facing, looking toward the bay,
mm-hmm.
that's where he had his, it was a warehouse mm-hmm. and his office.
Mm-hmm.
And and this guy lived in there. See, what was his name now? Gee, I knew him really well. I used to go in there and have coffee with him in the 1920.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, that winter he went to, he had to go to Washington for something. And he got pneumonia on the railroad while he was traveling and died. See, what was his name now? Mickelson? There was a son on the end of his name. Fredrickson, no?
Peterson, Johnson.
No, it was... it wasn't Ferguson. But there was a son on the...
Magnuson.
No. He was a tall, skinny guy, and I don't think he ate very right. He was, because every time I went, I visited him a lot, and he always had soda crackers and sardines to eat. You know, he nibbled.
Yeah. There's a lot of gingerbread on our
Yeah. Well, each one of them, see, he had that, each one of those had its own roof. A nice staircase and bedrooms upstairs. Then that was the main, that central portion. Then all these other things were different rooms. And they each had their own roof. So that made it kind of awkward for repairing, you know, all them little roofs.
Like something out of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They even had, like in the big living room, which was this front, you know, mm-hmm. this, well, he had sliding doors in the wall there. Big doors that they could slide right into walls and made the whole house then was one big living room, the center, you know, with them doors open. See, that, well, it made the living room and dining room and you know, it all became one room then. Those were big wide doors and they slid right into the wall, you know.